This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
Our goal is to compete and really put a fun team on the court that really gets after it.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
We're very talented. I mean, when we go out there and compete at a high level and give a lot of effort, we can be a good team.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
No John Wall, no Eric Gordon, and no offense in the fourth quarter, and the Rockets drop their second game in a row, 119-94 against the Charlotte Hornets, falling to 11-12 on the season, now 6-7 on the road. What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at ClutchCityCR. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. This was honestly not a horrible game until the fourth quarter, and then just everything, just the Rockets found a way to hit that implode button. It was amazing. It was really spectacular. It takes effort to implode that horrendously. Scoring only 7 points in a quarter is in a National Basketball Association level game is just wildly impressive. Let me lead off by first, sorry I missed the Monday show this week, what would have been the Spurs recap. I might touch base on a little bit of stuff from the Spurs game, but I was kind of fighting over a cold, and I sounded like butt, to be honest, and I'm still kind of fighting through it, so if I, you know, sniffle through this one, I apologize. But the show must go on. Because, look, somebody's got to talk about these Rockets and how just horrendous that fourth quarter was. And, I mean, it wasn't all bad because there's very few bright spots from this game, unfortunately. Look, and that's just the reality of the matter, right? No Christian Wood, you know, he's out for an extended period, and we've already talked about before how he truly unlocks this Rockets offense. He really does. And without C. Wood out there, and without John Wall, and without Eric Gordon, who has been having a stellar season, this team is severely undermanned. Right? Very short-staffed. And honestly, through three quarters, I was actually wholly impressed with how this team was playing, right? You're missing three starting caliber players. The Hornets are an incredible three-point shooting team. They're having a pretty solid game, playing some really tough defense. Lonzo Ball is having himself a night, you know, raining threes from the heavens. And honestly, they were in this game, right? It was tied up 87-87 near the tail end of the third, and you know, a couple more buckets here or there, and you know, they go into the fourth quarter down. I think it was down 3 or down 5. It really wasn't that bad. But then the Hornets reel off 22 of the next 23 points in that fourth quarter, and this is how we're going to break it down. We're going to hear a little bit from Silas in this segment, and I'll talk about the couple bright spots from this game, which were Jayshon Tate and Ben McLemore. And to an extent, Daniel House Jr. a little bit, Sterling Brown a little bit, David Nwaba a little bit, who, speaking of David Nwaba, just prayers up for David, because that tumble that he took at the end of the game when he went up, held onto the rim, and basically went horizontal for a moment and then smashed himself on the floor. That was very scary. And to see him immediately sit straight up and you know, it was a very scary fall. I posted the video to my Twitter feed if you didn't tune in, if you, you know, tuned out of the game because of how ugly that fourth quarter was. David Nwaba took a really nasty spill. It looks like, hopefully, it's just going to be a wrist injury, although there's no update on him yet. He was favoring his left wrist significantly after that landing, and I'm sure that the NBA is going to put him through concussion protocol and all that, so it would not surprise me to see him being held out of the next game due to a sore wrist, because that was a very nasty spill. But let's go. So we're gonna hear from Silas. I'm going to touch on a couple of the bright spots from this game, talk about some of the negative areas, and then in segment three, we are going to start a dialogue about PJ Tucker and Victor Oladipo, specifically those two guys. It's time. It has to happen. And I'm going in on those guys in segment three. But first, let's go ahead and hear from Steven Silas, who was not happy with how this game played out whatsoever.
Yeah, I didn't think we did a good job on defense. I didn't think we closed out like we're supposed to. I didn't think that we even started possessions in a defensive stance and ready to play. I just didn't think we were attentive to the defensive end of the floor. And it just wasn't, like, I showed some clips at halftime and we weren't even in defensive stances. And we have to have ball pressure and we have to be in help, and it's hard, and we have to do both. We have to help, and then we have to sprint to a closeout, and we didn't do that.
Rockets, unfortunately, giving up a lot of open threes in this one. The Hornets are an above average three-point shooting team, above league average, I should say. And in this game, they shot a blistering 46.3% from behind the arc, 19 of 41 in this game. Lonzo Ball had himself a night. He had 7 of those 19 triples on his way to 24 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. Lonzo Ball is absolutely going to be a star in this league. You could see it on display tonight. You've seen it on display throughout this, early season. He's going to be an exciting player to watch. The Hornets have finally found their guy to build around. Jordan finally got his guy. Now, compared to the Rockets, three-point shooting, just 13 of 47 from behind the arc for a lowly 27.7%. Ben McLemore having 4 of those 13 triples in the second quarter alone. And frankly, again, my two brightest spots for the Rockets in this game were Jayshon Tate and Ben McLemore. So I'll start with Benny Mac first. But, he was an absolute spark off the bench. And, even though I've been sitting here advocating that the Rockets move Ben McLemore, that isn't to say that he doesn't. Like, he's still a good player. And this game, if anything, kind of showed that he can still be of value. Now, the problem is I don't necessarily see him being of value here in Houston, right? And you could be asking yourself, well, JT Jackson, what the hell, right? The guy just scored 15 points in a quarter. How can he not be of value here? He just does not have the defensive capabilities to not be a liability on the court at this point, right? Throughout this game, when he was on the court, the Hornets were actively seeking him out, right? They were actively looking for him on switches, trying to isolate on him, because he is a below average defender, unfortunately. And there were times where he's been, kind of more of a net neutral and not been susceptible to lapses on that end. But it's just in this new look Rockets team, you can't afford to have somebody who is, really a gigantic hole on one end of the basketball, whether it be offense or defense. And that is going to be the discussion that we talk about in segment three when we talk about PJ Tucker and the fact that offensively he is not, carrying his share of the weight, unfortunately, and that makes it really tough for this Rockets team. But with Ben McLemore, it's the same situation. It's just defensively, unfortunately. And then, but apart from that, he did have a just lights out second quarter. That's great to see. He was raining threes in this game, but overall, I was disappointed that we didn't see more from him in this game, right? And so it's okay. Again, I could still be advocating that the Rockets should move the guy and try and get some value back for him, and also still appreciate when he does show up and show out in a Rockets jersey. The two are not mutually exclusive. And then Jayshon Tate, who, you know, continues to impress. I would have liked to see Jayshon Tate get more touches tonight. And I'm, you know, upset that he didn't. He has shown, you know, pretty consistently that when given the opportunity, he has, you know, kind of risen to that challenge. He only had 7 shot attempts tonight, 13 points on 5 of 7 shooting, did miss his only 3-pointer, got to the foul line 4 times, hit 3 of them, had 4 rebounds, had an assist, had a steal, had a monster block, a recovery block in transition on LaMelo Ball, which was amazing to see. So Ben McLemore contesting the shot originally in transition on LaMelo Ball, not doing a good enough job of it, and LaMelo would have absolutely probably made the layup over Ben McLemore, but Jayshon Tate came soaring in and swatted the ever-living hell out of that ball with just some ferocity behind it, you know, and I had to throw a Rookie of the Year meme on Twitter because of it, but anywho, so I mean, and Tate honestly had some really nice interior finishes in this game. Again, I've constantly and consistently been blown away by his touch around the rim. And I've spoken about it before, the fact that, you know, he has that interior, that developed interior game as if he were a big, so that when he does, you know, drive into the paint, one, he's just got a really soft touch while he's driving, but then he also has the ability to, you know, if he catches the ball and he's pinned down low, right, he knows how to take that kind of power dribble and, you know, utilize his pivot foot and swing around and get defenders out of the way, be it pump fakes or spins, just an array of moves down low to get clean looks off around the rim. Again, just, you know, very blown away by what he's done and been able to do to this point. And again, I really wish that we would have seen more of him, you know, a more aggressive Jayshon Tate, or just more opportunities for him to score the ball in this game, as well as opportunities to playmake. And I actually, that's going to lead me into one of my next points here in the second segment, talking about the downfalls of this team in this game. And we'll get there in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at Blue Nile. This episode is brought to you by 1010. Now, you may have read about this in New York Times and Style Magazine or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring. They're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com, and when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're ready to mark a special commitment or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings is now available exclusively at BlueNile.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets' collapse against the Charlotte Hornets, 119-94, falling to 11-12 on the season. And so one of the biggest issues, right, in that fourth quarter was just the distinct lack of ball movement, playmaking, shot making, ability to play the game of basketball. No, I digress. I'm going to go in on these guys, but not that hard. In fact, I actually want to hear what Silas has to say really quickly about his thoughts on the fourth quarter of this game.
Yeah, they picked up the pressure on us in the fourth quarter, and we didn't handle it well. We didn't have enough ball handling on the floor. And it resulted in isolations. It resulted in poor shots. They did a good job. They really picked up the pressure on us with their switching in the second and the fourth quarter, and we didn't have an answer.
So that's a good segue, I guess, for what I had mentioned at the end of segment one. But you know, I've been largely unimpressed with Silas's decisions to this point to not utilize Jayshon Tate as more of a playmaker. And I say that because there are a lot of weapons on this team that like what we're seeing, right, is we're seeing a distinct drop off, you know, Rockets Twitter, everybody, myself, clamoring for a backup playmaker to be able to run the show when John Wall sits down, because there's just this distinct drop off in team production when John Wall hits the bench. And I think that's, you know, not just because of his playmaking. He brings a lot more to the table than that. But I'd really like to see Jayshon Tate get a chance to legitimately play kind of that point forward role and run the offense. And I say that because we saw, like, that one-off, right, when the Rockets were super undermanned the very first game after the James Harden trade, they rolled out a nine-man lineup, and Jayshon Tate was essentially your, like, playmaker, your point guard in that game. He had 10 assists. And that's not a one-off. Like, his passing chops are on display frequently. He just doesn't have enough opportunities as the primary facilitator, primary ball handler in these offensive sets to really get a chance to shine the way that I feel like he could. And I'm not saying Jayshon Tate is the solution. I still think the Rockets probably need a legitimate backup point guard, you know, a legitimate backup playmaker. But I feel like he could be used much better than he's currently being used, right? He's basically exclusively been used as a wing presence, which is what he is, but I think that's limiting him. And I was kind of expecting, based on when I originally asked Steven Silas what his plans were for Jayshon Tate moving forward, I was expecting Silas to utilize him and to use his passing ability as a way to kind of unlock some of, you know, what this team is capable of, especially on nights when you have John Wall and Eric Gordon missing. There isn't really a reason why Jayshon Tate shouldn't have the ball in his hands more often, right? It's understandable Victor Oladipo had the ball a lot in this game. And honestly, Victor Oladipo did a really solid job of facilitating in this one. Victor Oladipo really did have a better game. You know, his outside shooting has continued to struggle. At one point, he was 0 of 5 and then like 1 of 6 from behind the arc at one point. Finished the game 7 of 18 overall shooting, just 3 of 10 from behind the arc. But it was 4 of 4 at the line, was shooting a little bit better inside the arc. 4 of 8 inside the arc there. On the way to 21 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists, 1 steal, with only 1 turnover. So Oladipo was having a better game, but, you know, expecting Vic to be the only playmaker on the floor in a game with no John Wall and Eric Gordon is not a good recipe. And, you know, I know that they do try to utilize DeMarcus Cousins. They're trying to, you know, operate with him out of the high post a little bit, utilizing some dribble handoff with him and some pick and pop game. But the problem with DeMarcus is he does not have that rolling ability or the driving ability that Christian Wood does. And when he tries to do those things, it tends to end poorly. Cousins is just not that player anymore. And when he tries those things, it just, again, it does not end well. And it also really messes with this team when they do switch things. So if they switch around, it prevents Cousins from having that ability to pick and pop. And so it kind of forces the team into these, you know, frustrating isolation heavy style offensive sets. And that's what we've seen for years from the Rockets, right? Is that switching defense takes teams out of what they want to do. And if you've got the defensive personnel to allow for it and the opposing team doesn't have an offensive player or two that can take advantage of said mismatches or said switches, then you get away with the switching defense for as long as possible. And that's what the Hornets did against the Rockets, right? DeMarcus Cousins was not utilizing his size to punish any of the smaller Hornets players on switches when he was out there. Victor Oladipo was able to utilize his speed occasionally to blow by some of the bigger Hornets players on certain switches, but wasn't finishing consistently enough inside, or, you know, wasn't making the right reads occasionally. There were a couple possessions where he got all the way inside, and we've talked about this before with Vic, is, you know, he needs to be better about reading the defense, right? And there's multiple Rockets that need to be better about that. Gordon and Wall as well, about once they collapse the defense and they see a second or a third body in the paint as they're, you know, penetrating, that they need to be ready to kick the ball out to the open shooter. And they need to know where those open shooters are. So there's just a lot of different areas that offensively this team was struggling in. And I like, look, and I like Mason Jones as, you know, a backup ball handler on this team. I don't know if he's necessarily the answer at backup point for this team. He's shown a, you know, a willingness to pass the ball, and he's got, you know, good court vision. But I've also been disappointed in Mason Jones because, look, for being, you know, supposedly the most confident guy in this past NBA draft, he's not showing a whole lot of confidence out on the court. You know, I'd really, really like to see him be more aggressive, looking for his own shot when he's out there, because a lot of times it really feels like he catches the ball without the intent to shoot. Right. If we could just take that Gerald green light mentality and drop it into Mason Jones, I really feel like it would make a world of difference. And again, I don't know if it's, you know, if he's doubting himself or if he's just trying not to be, you know, a quote unquote ball hog when he's on the court, if he's trying to, you know, have that pass first mentality to earn more minutes. I don't know. But he needs to be a shooter when he's out there, because that's what he is excellent at doing. And there is no reason for him not to immediately fire the ball up if he's got the window to do so when he catches the ball on the three-point line. He doesn't need to look to drive and kick again. He doesn't need to look to, you know, create for a teammate. If he's got the window to shoot the ball, he needs to shoot the ball. That's what he is getting paid to do, and that's what he excels at. So again, been disappointed with Mason Jones a little bit in just, you know, his inability to create his own shot. And this was a concern I had early on, right? If you've listened to the show with any regularity, you know, one of my biggest concerns with Mason Jones was his lack of athleticism. And maybe it's unfair to call it a lack of athleticism, but a lack of speed, you know, whether it be defensively or even off the dribble offensively. You know, he just looks slower than a lot of the other guys out there, specifically other guards. And maybe that's something that, you know, changes over time. Maybe he's able to slim down a little bit more and have a little bit more burst. But he, you know, it's tough for him to create that level of separation from his defender, you know, off the bounce. And, you know, that's why I think that when he catches the ball, if he's open, he has to take those opportunities, because he has not shown a consistent ability to generate his own shot by generating separation from his defender. So went down that rabbit hole with Mason Jones. Didn't mean to go super in on him, but I'd like to see more out of him, right? I expect a little bit more out of him, and I think he's capable of more is my thing. You know, I have, you know, high expectations for him. Who else have I not talked about here in this quarter? You know, I guess just, you know, that top of that fourth quarter stretch, that's essentially what we saw. Is we just saw, you know, Silas really summed it up well. You know, the Hornets, you got to give them credit. Their defense was really stellar in this one, but it was also the Rockets not doing what they need to do offensively. You know, they weren't generating good looks. They weren't making those extra passes. They weren't collapsing the defense. They weren't doing so much of what they need to do to find success offensively. And then to pair that with the breakdowns they started having defensively in that fourth quarter, you know, they were right there neck and neck. Again, this game was 87-87 at the tail end of the third. But then they started having those breakdowns defensively in the fourth, and you compound that with the offensive struggles, and you get that ridiculous 22-1 run that the Hornets went on. I mean, it's just abysmal. So coming up, we're going to have discussions about Victor Oladipo and PJ Tucker, and we'll get there in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Look, football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. Just sign up using our promo code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, for your very own 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. And again, that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Look, Built Bar, first off, they came out with another brand new flavor, and it's the coconut brownie chunk. I got the sample box in the mail, and oh my God, it is so damn good. And like, I can't even sugarcoat it. I have to be upfront with you. And that's the greatest part about Built Bar, right? Is I'm not fronting on these flavors, right? I have a new favorite. I've said it for a while that double chocolate was my favorite. Now the coconut brownie chunk is absolutely my number one favorite flavor, but they've got so many to choose from. They've got mint chocolate brownie, banana bread, peanut butter, carrot cake, you name it, Built Bar probably has it. And the best part is, right, these aren't traditional protein bars. They're not gritty or chalky. They're soft, they're easy to chew. They're covered in 100% delicious chocolate. They're low cal, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They are amazing for a keto diet, and you can check it out too. Just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. If you haven't done so yet, do me a favor, hit subscribe. If you're listening to the show, I'd imagine you're probably already subscribed, but hit subscribe, drop a review if you could. That'd be incredible. I used to peddle for reviews all the time and kind of stopped doing that, but it does mean a lot to me. I read every single one of those, and they make the show look good, right? They make the show look good, which makes us attractive to advertisers, and then we get to keep this thing running strong. And that's the goal, right? Is to be able to keep this thing going 5 days a week. Hey, maybe one day we can do this thing 7 days a week and really do it every single day. That'd be cool. Anyways, so let's get into PJ Tucker and Victor Oladipo. And I really don't know who I want to talk about first, because neither one is fun to talk about. So let's go. We're going to go Vic first. All right. So with Oladipo, right, there have been, we've got a decent, little sample size now of him, about, 9 or 10, maybe 11 games, somewhere around that vicinity as a Houston Rocket. And, some of my takeaways from Vic so far to this point is, because there's people that just, they just want him gone, right? And understandably, right, he's had some very subpar performances in a Rockets jersey. Now, that being said, I think that he's still, it doesn't help that the Rockets have had zero consistency in their lineups, right? This game specifically, they trotted out their 14th different starting lineup this NBA season, which is just absurd to think about. So he has not been able to find a level of consistency where, one game he'll have to be the primary ball handler and facilitator. Another game he takes more of a backseat to John Wall. Another game he is, doing dual duty with Eric Gordon with no John Wall. It doesn't help that he hasn't had a consistent lineup of guys, a consistent cast around him to really, kind of fit himself into one type of role with this team, unfortunately. So I do sympathize there that, with this ever-changing cast of characters in this Rockets lineup, that does not lend itself to any favors for Vic. Now, that being said, his outside shooting has been really abysmal. Have not been pleased with that whatsoever. And, that's just something, part of it is, sometimes it's, really ill-advised shots, taken early in the shot clock, whether it be, just an, a three early in the shot clock on a switch or something. You know, I mean, just haven't been really pleased with his shot selection from the perimeter, including some, you know, strange long twos, which, you know, are not fun. Now, on the other hand, he has shown an ability to be able to take people off the dribble, and he's got a really explosive first step. You know, and this is, you know, post-injury Victor Oladipo, who's still able to really blow by, you know, opposing players, even opposing guards. You know, he makes, you know, opposing players look slow, and he's got a really crafty ability to finish in and around the rim, or, you know, at times kind of pulling up for that short-range jumper just inside the paint, you know, before he gets, you know, truly all the way into the teeth of the opposing defense. So, you know, there's been some good, there's been some bad. He's shown an ability to handle the ball, to playmake for others. His defense, I've been impressed with for the most part. It feels like he's a really, you know, added benefit to this Rockets point of attack defense, and he's definitely been one of the reasons that this team has skyrocketed up the defensive rankings this season. That's been a big part of having him on the floor. So the biggest issue is, I think that, you know, Victor Oladipo isn't going to be pre-injury Oladipo. And I think that's an important takeaway, is he's not going to be the guy. He's not going to be, you know, I guess carrying this team down the stretch of games, that type of thing. And I think that he's also now suffering greatly from not having Christian Wood in the lineup, right? Not having a true rim-running pick-and-roll threat to be able to operate that two-man game with. You know, we saw pretty early on that he and Christian Wood were picking up a level of chemistry together. And even though Oladipo hadn't found that connection over the top of the defense yet, you know, throwing lobs to Seawood, you know, Oladipo's got that nice little ability to throw those little pocket passes on the roll to his big man. We saw some really nice connections and some nice feeds from him to Seawood. So, and not only that, but having Seawood rolling to the rim opens things up further for Victor Oladipo and allows him the ability to better finish in and around the rim or in the paint. And so not having that for at least the next 3 to 4 weeks it just sucks. Like, that, there's no other way to put it. It sucks for Oladipo that he's, you know, being put in this position where his outside game, his outside shot is just not in a good place right now. He's got a really, you know, strong interior game and ability to finish around the rim, but he's not able to utilize it as effectively because there's no more C. Wood. And, you know, at this point, it's unfortunate, the Seawood injury, both for, you know, the Rockets trying to remain competitive and for the Rockets trying to hopefully raise the ceiling on the asking price for Victor Oladipo as they, you know, more than likely shop him around this trade deadline, because he, you know, essentially at this point he's kind of playing his value down, unfortunately, and that's not great for the Rockets if they were, you know, intent on trying to flip him. Because at this point, I don't know. I'm almost more so leaning the direction that it would be more beneficial for the Rockets to, if they can't flip him for something at the deadline, to just let him walk this summer and to kind of capitalize on the cap room that'll be generated from him walking this summer to pursue a free agent, somebody who A, meshes the timeline a little bit better alongside Christian Wood and Jayshon Tate, somebody who addresses, you know, maybe some front court needs for this team if they don't make any moves at the deadline. Again, a John Collins type would be pretty interesting, a front court of Jayshon Tate, John Collins, and Christian Wood for the foreseeable future would be a very interesting front court with a lot of versatility on both sides of the basketball. So that would be kind of a fun thought to entertain. But that's just kind of where I'm at on Victor Oladipo, is I don't necessarily see him in the long-term plans for these Houston Rockets. It just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. Now, he could still be, you know, progressing back from that, from his injury. Maybe there's better days for, you know, in the future for Victor Oladipo, and he does get back to that all-star level pre-injury Victor Oladipo, because he's had flashes of that to this point. but it's the inconsistency that has been the killer with Vic. Is he has not been able to put together a string of consistent games. You know, it'll be one average or above average game and then multiple kind of stinkers in a row. And that just hasn't been great to watch. And again, a lot of that is his outside shot not falling, and now not having Christian Wood to pair with him offensively is not helping things for that matter. Because again, you can't, you know, expect the same things out of DeMarcus Cousins offensively in the pick and roll than you can from Christian Wood. And so that definitely hurts. And it's hurting not just Victor Oladipo, but it's hurting the entire Rockets team, because now you need everybody on offense to really pick up the slack and try and fill that void, because essentially you're missing 20 to 25 points a night that you would be getting, an efficient 20 to 25 points a night from Christian Wood. And that brings us to PJ Tucker. And again, you know, I was talking earlier about how I can still advocate for a Ben McLemore trade, but, you know, but also still want him to get more touches or be, you know, utilized more in a game where he's obviously got it going, which I do think is a direct indictment of Steven Silas in this game, the fact that he, you know, didn't get more touches for Ben McLemore. But the same can be said for PJ Tucker. I can still be very high on what PJ Tucker brings to a basketball team as far as making winning plays, playing good defense, the good things that he does bring to a team, the leadership mentality. Just, you know, everything from a culture perspective, all of that, right? Top to bottom. I can still be very high on all of that and still be thoroughly disappointed with how much of a negative offensive asset PJ Tucker is. Look, I've criticized PJ's inability to go off the bounce multiple times. He is not capable of taking his defenders off the dribble. He's not capable of creating for others off the bounce, unfortunately. Rarely you'll see PJ Tucker create for somebody else off the dribble, and pretty much he is a black hole offensively. And that's really tough to have on the floor in general. Even when Christian Wood is out there, it's tough. But at least with C Wood out there, there's more layers to the offense, and there's more opportunities created by the heavy dose of pick and roll, by C. Wood kind of operating out of the middle part of that floor as he's, you know, reading the defense and deciding how to react to whatever moves he's making. There's more opportunities for Tucker to get those corner three-point shots, which is essentially his entire offensive repertoire, unfortunately, besides, you know, the occasional offensive putback, or, you know, sometimes he'll have a decent cut here and there. But overall, for a team, and Rob K. Sports on Twitter put this really well, put it into words really well, and I was kind of sharing the same sentiment when I stumbled across this, you know, after the game. And basically, you know, PJ Tucker on a team, you know, on a championship contender where he doesn't have to carry his weight, you know, I guess offensively, where there's, you know, two or three all-stars to kind of shoulder the load, and all he has to do is make his corner threes and then do all his dirty work on the other side of the ball, that's where he needs to be, right? That's his setup. That's exactly where he thrives, and that's why he was such a great fit alongside James Harden for all these years. But now that this Rockets team, this new-look Rockets team with this more team-oriented style of play where really everybody has to contribute on both sides of the basketball, you can't have a player who is just a flat negative on one side or the other. And right now, Ben McLemore is that defensively, and PJ Tucker is that offensively. And so we're seeing lapses for this team, both defensively sometimes when Ben McLemore's out there, and offensively pretty consistently when PJ Tucker is out there, that this team just cannot afford to be essentially playing 4-on-5 basketball is what it comes down to. Because unless PJ has those wide open threes, and that's the other problem, is he had three of them in this game and didn't hit a single one. So, you know, it's not like he's not even, you know, it'd be one thing if he just wasn't getting the opportunities to shoot the ball, but he's getting opportunities and he's not converting them now. And so that's where we fall into this major issue where if he's only able to do one thing offensively and he can't even do that consistently, then we have to start looking at some hard truths with PJ Tucker. And as much as it's going to sting, if the Rockets can convert PJ and, you know, move him to a contender, if there's a team that is interested in procuring his services, they probably need to look at it. I would love to keep PJ Tucker here in Houston. I'd love to keep him in that Udonis Haslam role and keep him around to grow and mentor those younger players to kind of keep setting that culture, that tone for this new look Rockets team and you know, be that veteran voice in the locker room. But they can't afford to do that if it means that he's going to continue to get starters levels minutes. And I think that's an area where, again, Jayshon Tate more or less is being groomed to take over that PJ Tucker role, at least in the short term, right? Ideally, maybe down the line, you'd like somebody with a bit more length in that front court role alongside Christian Wood for the, you know, for the future of this team. But at least in the immediate present, the here and now, if they move on from PJ Tucker, your starting front court is absolutely going to be Jayshon Tate and Daniel House Jr. And deservedly so. Those are the two guys that should be starting alongside Christian Wood once he's back healthy. But pardon me. But basically it's to a point where, and it's much more obvious when John Wall and Eric Gordon aren't out there, because then you can really see the distinct lack of ball handling and playmaking ability on the floor, as Steven Silas pointed out at the top of that fourth quarter and throughout the fourth quarter. Just not enough playmaking, not enough shot creation going around for other guys, too much isolation, all of that. And again, having a guy who is only capable of standing in the corner offensively and hitting open threes is not great. I cannot count the number of times that PJ Tucker catches the ball in the corner and is forced into an immediate, like, one or two dribbles out of the corner into an immediate dribble handoff to whoever is, you know, slotted in the guard in the, or whoever's positioned in the slot right there. Or, you know, one or two dribbles towards the paint and then picks up the dribble and immediately has to, you know, kick it back out, but hasn't really collapsed the defense to an effective extent to make the drive worth it. And so, you know, again, PJ Tucker brings a lot to a team. He really does. I cannot speak more highly than I have of PJ Tucker in recent shows and, you know, over the last year and a half that I've hosted this show. You know, it's been an absolute pleasure to watch PJ Tucker play the game of basketball, because he does make winning basketball plays. He makes the team better, but not this iteration of the team, I think. I think that there's just, you know, the shortcomings in his game are more readily apparent now than they ever have been. And it's basically to a point where the Rockets really, hopefully, Rafael Stone can find something, some situation where they can get PJ Tucker, you know, out and get him to a team where he can, you know, actually contend and compete and also get back some semblance of value for him, because that's probably the direction that is best for the franchise moving forward. So I think that's basically what I got for this one. You know, but the good news is it's the NBA, right? You got to have a short memory. The Rockets are back at it. They've got the second half of the back-to-back where they will have John Wall and Eric Gordon back. TBD on David Nwaba. I would not be surprised if he were to miss this game due to the wrist that he really badly landed on after that awkward fall at the end of regulation. But they're playing the Pelicans, right? A team that they beat recently and beat pretty easily recently, kind of coasted in that game besides a small third quarter push from Zion Williamson. So no Christian Wood in this game again. We'll see how they play. Things have consistently looked much, much better with John Wall on the basketball court than when he is off the basketball court. So hopefully they will continue that stretch. John Wall is still 7-1 when he wears a Rockets jersey. And I think Red94 on Twitter put it best a day or two ago or a few days back by saying, losses when John Wall isn't suited up don't count. And that's pretty much how I feel, right? It's really tough to walk away from this game and be truly upset, down three starters, or three starting caliber players, I should say, down the scoring punch of Eric Gordon off the bench. Because really, the bench unit did a good job in this one. David Nwaba with a bit of an inefficient night, just 4-14 overall shooting. But apart from that, the bench unit really did show up and, you know, do their job through three quarters. But then it was that fourth quarter where just everything imploded, and, you know, that's what's bound to happen, unfortunately, in a game where you're just down that many guys and, you know, you start to, your luck essentially starts to run out at some point, right? And I'm honestly kind of impressed that it didn't happen sooner in this one with the absence of John Wall and Eric Gordon. But it'll be nice to see those guys back in their Rockets jerseys and playing against the Pelicans. Hopefully they can right this ship and get back to 500 with another win. So we will be manifesting win number 12 for this Rockets team. But for this episode, today's episode, that's going to be where we call it. As always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.